Well, it's been a while, but we're back for another edition of the Total Rugby League Show. And joining me here in a virtual League Express HQ this week, we're joined by Matthew Shaw, by Alex Davis and by Martin Sadler. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. So, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Total Rugby League Show, back as we head towards a busy weekend of Challenge Cup action, as well as talking a bit about the NRL and a little catch-up about rugby league politics and Toronto and that kind of thing. Alex is with us, Matthew Shaw is with us, and Martin Sadler's with us. Where do you want to start, gentlemen? Shall we start with the actual way Super League is shaping up as we head towards the month of October? Martin, how do you think the competition's shaping up?
Well, I think it's shaping up as well as we could probably have expected. I mean, you know, the teams are just playing for four places for the playoffs. And at one stage, not very long ago, it looked as though those four places were tied up, really, by Warrington, Wigan, Saints and Leeds. But after this week's results, you know, we've got Catalan Dragons coming up very strongly on the rails. They play Wakefield on Sunday. And if they win again, they're going to be right in the mix. And I think it's true to say that Huddersfield are playing well at the moment. Three wins under Luke Robinson, tremendous results. They're still in with a chance. And I think Hull FC, after Thursday night's really exciting win over Castleford Tigers, with that late try by Jake Connor, I think you've got to say they've still got an outside chance. So I think that's pretty good. You know, probably seven of the 11 teams are really up there battling away. I think Castleford have probably now got too much to do, as have the other teams, you know, Hull KR and Wakefield and so on. So, you know, but it's still pretty exciting, Ben.
Matthew, would you agree with that? It looks like, basically, for those four spots now, it's looking like it's going to be the top six with Huddersfield being the cut-off. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think even if some... I'd probably call them fantasists, wanted to believe that Hull could get back in, I'd say there's no chance because you just aren't good enough, is a simple answer. And I'm in a position to say this because I am, I had to get this in nice and early. I am the leader of the League Express tipping competition at the minute. Third in the whole of the media, I'll have you all know. I think you're about right, Ben. I think it's six fighting for four. To be honest, I think the top three will be Saints, Wigan, Warrington. They look, certainly Saints for Warrington look far and away better than anyone else for me, closely followed by Wigan. And then I think you're looking at Leeds, Catalan and Huddersfield fighting it out for that final spot. What I would say is, I think Leeds, if they get to the Challenge Cup final, then they might sacrifice the top four. Not intentionally, I just think the amount of games they would have to play would make it incredibly difficult. And it might just allow for a Huddersfield to sneak in, because what people forget, if is the biggest word in sport, but if they hadn't have lost those three games by a point, which they have done since lockdown, they'd currently be top of the table.
Top of the table at the moment is Warrington, Alex, a big win against Catalans last weekend. But, you know, Catalans have only played nine games and they bounced back with an extraordinary result against Leeds on Wednesday. But I suppose that's about the Challenge Cup, isn't it, and balancing squads and that kind of thing. But Catalans are in this, as Matthew says. I mean, it's going to be a juggling act at Headingley over the next month or so.
And that's the thing that Catalan don't have to do as much as the other teams. They don't have to juggle their Challenge Cup run because they're now out of the Challenge Cup, so they can focus solely on Super League, and that'll probably help them, as Matt said, over teams like Leeds who are looking for the Challenge Cup as well. But I agree with Matt that top three kind of are in their own little league. Wigan, Warrington and St Albans seem to be a little bit of a cut above the rest, whereas Leeds, Catalan and Huddersfield perhaps lack a bit of consistency to get into that top three, but those three will be probably fighting out for that top four spot. Catalan just needs that a bit more consistency, because when they're on it, they're on it. But when they're not, they can throw up results like losing to Salford in the Challenge Cup.
Yes. Wigan, we should say, have got the same percentage win record as Warrington. A curious week for Wigan as we head towards Saturday's Challenge Cup semi-finals. I mean, Martin, what do you make of that defeat to St Helens?
I wrote in League Express this week that it was interesting to compare that game with another game 17 years ago on the Good Friday at the JJB Stadium, as it then was, when Wigan beat Saints 24-22 with a lot of debutants, with four debutants, including Kevin Brown. But, you know, the difference was that in those days they had a lot of players who were also on the pitch. Adrian Lamb was on the pitch, Brian Carney, Terry O'Connor. You know, they had a young Sean O'Loughlin. So they had plenty of players who gave them the sort of experience to be able to come back and beat Saints that day. Whereas this last week, you know, they were playing with Harry Smith as the captain. And before this season, Harry had played one game off the bench for Wigan in Super League. And yet there he was now captaining the side because he was probably one of the more experienced players when they had six debutants. So, you know, it was always going to happen that Saints would win that game easily. And they did, 42-0, obviously. I thought they scored some great tries, incidentally. Regan Grace was absolutely majestic, in my view, in the two tries that he scored. And Jack Welsby on the other wing did almost equally well. So it was a great performance by Saints. And I think Saints are now the clear favourite to win the title. They've not got a distraction of the Challenge Cup. They're out, you know, they were knocked out by Warrington in the sixth round. So it's all down to them now. And I think anybody else who wants to win the title this year, they've somehow got to find a way of beating St Helens. In Warrington, you know, have been great. And they just lost narrowly by 2 points to Salford on Tuesday. Again, playing with a whole host of young players and debutants and so on. So I think they could be the biggest threat to St Helens this year.
Matthew, just to mention, I think we can officially call them the dark horses now as they do sit in sixth. But just to mention for Huddersfield, you know, a fantastic win over Castleford and a great win over Hull KR as well. They've kept the momentum going despite the head coach change. I mean, they're still there, aren't they, the Giants?
Well, like I said, if they hadn't have lost those three games by a point, they would be top of Super League. And don't get me wrong, it's a big word, as if, in sport, and I get that. But it shows you just how close they are. For me, Aidan Caesar is currently the best player in the competition. Now, whether that's because his excellence is highlighted in a side that maybe doesn't have as many superstars as some of the top-tier teams, I don't know. But he's certainly the most influential player on his team at the minute. Is Aidan Caesar.
That's the word, isn't it? It's the influence he has on Huddersfield. If he doesn't play, then I think Huddersfield are a far weaker side. So as you said, he's probably the most influential player in Super League at the moment. I think without Caesar, they would have probably lost to Hull KR because Parcell and Hull KR were coming at them. And Caesar just steadied the ship with a lovely little kick to McQueen, and I think that was the real difference for the Giants in that particular game.
And it's worth noting, the game they lost to Warrington, he was off the field. That's when he picked up his injury. And I believe they lost that game against Leeds when he didn't play as well. It makes the point, but I think it also does prove how close they are. I don't think anyone's going to go as far as saying that Huddersfield are going to win the comp. I think that would be a very, very bold claim to make. But I think the proof is there that they are capable of beating the top teams.
They've beaten St Helens already this season, and if Caesar continues playing in this way, then they will have a chance in pretty much every game they play.
You look at Huddersfield, and really, with the squad that they have, they should be up there. They have some good players, the Huddersfield, really. You know, McGilvery is an England international, has been for many years. Jake Wardle looks sensational at the minute, and only a young lad. Kenny Edwards, in terms of strike, you're struggling to find better in the second row than that. They've got Lee Gaskell to come back in. I'm a massive fan of Gaskell. I really am. You know, you look at it, and the missing O'Brien, I think O'Brien's going to be a big miss for them for the rest of the season. But really, their squad should be up there. They should be competing. There's no reason why it should be a shock that they aren't up there. I think it's just the last couple of years. You could have probably said the same about Huddersfield, and they've not done it. But this is definitely the strongest squad they've had for a while.
I kind of disagree. I think their squad, while it looks strong at the moment, I don't think on paper it is as strong as you're saying. They're certainly having a great season, and a lot of their success is coming from the young players that they're bringing through, like Matty English, Jake Warder, who are now looking like proper, good Super League players. But certainly at the start of the season, you possibly wouldn't have said that they were going to lead the Giants into the top four and the grand final.
You're not meaning to say that bringing your own youth players can be a success. Surely not.
The Giants are certainly making a good fist of it, aren't they?
Wow.
You've got McGilvery and Kudja, who have come through the system and are now towards the end of their careers. But you've also got players like English and Wardle, and they've brought in Wilson from Radford, and he's coming through.
You know, I could see Wardle forcing his way into the England team next year for the World Cup. I mean, what an exciting prospect to think of, you know, Jake Wardle and, say, Harry Newman as a new young centre pairing for England next year. That would certainly be fascinating to watch, I think. And, you know, it's something I'd love to see. And, of course, we've seen a lot of young players in this last week or so turning out in these midweek games, particularly for the sides that have got Challenge Cup games on Saturday. So, you know, and I think if we're honest about it, most of the youngsters who have been turning out have not let themselves down at all. I think, you know, even the guys for Wigan, I mean, they did lose heavily, which was to be expected against a very strong Saints side. But they all individually did a lot of very good things, I thought.
How important it is that reserve grade comes back next year, seeing all these kids play this week. Because the talent is so blatantly apparent. It's there. They're ready to come through. But we have to make sure that they have weekly playing opportunities and not playing once every 3 or 4 months at Super League level, or being dropped into a League One club one week and then a Championship club the next. There has to be reserve grade. And
Is there? That's the trouble.
Martin, there has to be. There has to be.
At the moment, it doesn't look as though it's on the agenda. I hope you're right, though.
The thing that I don't get, and it's something that I just don't understand with rugby league and the way businesses are run, it seems to be that reserve grade is seen as a cost. However, as has been proven by Leeds, as has been proven by Wigan, as has been proven by St. Helens, the clubs that win the grand finals, by the way, that it's actually an investment, because you then keep them on lower salaries. You can bring them through. You've got massive depth. You can bring in your big time overseas players, because these guys aren't on as big a salary. It's not a cost. It is an investment.
No, well, I agree. I couldn't agree more with you on that. But as I say, if we assume, despite all that, that there probably might not be a reserve competition next year, what will happen to some of these young guys we've seen this week? I actually think some of them could conceivably, for example, just one example, join Toronto Wolfpack if they're brought back into Super League next year, because they will need to recruit quite a big squad quite quickly. And I would imagine that, you know, there might be quite a few year-long loan deals that could be done for some of those guys, some of those young players who might be interested in playing for that particular expansion club. So that would be
Toronto
an interesting thing to look forward to if it happens. Yeah,
if it happens,
which we might want to talk about at some stage on this broadcast.
We'll get there, Martin. Don't worry. I was just going to cover off just a couple more points with regards to Super League and the clubs who are in the competition at this stage of the year. Alex, I'll come to you for no other reason than I've not asked you a question for a while. Castleford, they've been dropping down that win percentage rate for the last few games now. They're not completely out of it, though. I mean, it's can they turn this around with how many games are left?
Come on, Ben.
Matthew? Well, it's a fine question. Go on, Alex.
To be honest, Ben, I think Castleford are out of it, mainly because there are too many teams in front of them. But what I would say is that in the last three games, which they've all lost, they've in every game they've been in a position to win those games, and they have not done so. And especially when you consider the fact that they've got quite a few key players in key positions that aren't playing, like you've got against Hull FC, they didn't have Danny Richardson, Jake Truman and Liam Watts. Those are three big outs, and they still put themselves in a position to win that game. They didn't win it, and that is why they're not going to be in the top four. But I don't think it's time to write Castleford or Daryl Powell off, for that matter, because I know that some people are writing him off saying that he's finished, and that I don't think that is true. I don't think he is finished. There's more still to come from him, and there's more still to come from the Tigers this year, but I don't think they'll have any chance of making that top four.
Daryl Powell at the moment seems to be on a one-man mission to criticise referees, and we've heard already that he's got a bit of a reprimand from the Rugby Football League. I just wonder what you think about that. For the last few games, he seems to have been almost obsessed by decisions going against the Tigers, and to the point at which it seems to be damaging the club, I think, almost. And certainly Phil Clark on the Sky broadcast last night had a bit of a go at Daryl. And I think Phil was justified in what he said. Phil had watched those games and hadn't seen any obvious signs of, you know, wrong decisions that disfavoured Castleford. I just wonder what you think about that.
Well, I'd agree with Clark and say that I do not like coaches having a go at referees, because you can say that, yes, a referee may have made a mistake, whatever, but I'm sure that his players during the game made mistakes as well. You've got to focus on what you can control. I know you can go behind the scenes and talk to Steve Ganson maybe and have a word with him, but you don't do it in a press conference to the media where you're supposed to be talking about your team and your players. And I think Powell, as you're saying, is getting that reputation for being someone that has a go at referees and has done it in the last few weeks. It doesn't sit well with me. And it's probably one of the reasons why he has a lot of heat on his back at the moment, because he's saying these kind of things and not looking at himself or the players. He's looking at the referees instead and drawing attention to what they're doing when he should be looking at himself and what the Tigers are doing, because that's what he can control.
They have been a bit unlucky in that. At the start of the restart, there was Tommy Makinson, who played against Castleford, got an five-match ban for what happened in that game. Then the same happened the week after, didn't it? There's been a few where retrospective action has been taken after playing Castleford. But in recent weeks, I don't see it. I could understand why he was upset with the try last night that was given, the Jordan Johnston one, because the melee in back play happened because it was Jax O'Neill, I think it was George Griffin, what went in and put a tackle on someone as they were throwing the ball. They committed to the tackle, but then O'Neill gets pulled to the ground. As a result, there's the melee, but from that, Hull score, where really, you know, the Hull player effectively prevented the Castleford defender from getting back in the line.
This is all well and good.
But then there were a few...
But in reality, yes, that decision could have gone either way, and he has a right to be upset about it. But he should also be looking at the fact that, you know, Jake Connor has scored the winning try, and that can be avoided from a Castleford point of view. So it's not just the referee's fault for Castleford.
Well, I was going to say as well, he seemed angry at the time with Matt Cook and Nathan Massey being penalised for late shots, but they were late shots. No, they were. Mm. I mean, Massey should have probably been simbing for his. Cook's wasn't as bad, but I think he was simbing as a result of the first one. I always did feel this was a building block year for them. You will recall, Ben, me being absolutely chastised for daring to tip them to finish ninth in the league. Where are they now, Alex?
Well, here he comes. Honestly, he's relentless. Relentless.
I'll answer my thing.
Inside intel here, Ben. There is a bet, an office bet between me and Alex.
Right.
I stuck to my word and said Castleford will finish ninth. And I have tipped Salford to finish above Castleford, to which Alex thought was absolutely hilarious. So we put a bet on it. So there is a bet going on. And when Castleford were on 45% win rate or whatever, and Salford were on 22, Alex thought he was a genius. Well, there is now 2.1% between the two teams.
I can't think of anything that would give Castleford more motivation, Matthew, than knowing that you'd tip them to finish ninth.
It just seemed to me, and I stick by it, I think if you look at this year, they had a young halfback pairing. Exciting pairing for sure, but they're not at the top of the game. They've still got improvements to make on their game. With Truman, it's consistency. With Richardson, defensive left, they will get better. There's no doubt. But that is going to take time to flourish. It is. It just is.
In regards to Powell and the referee situation, it's not just Powell. We have to say that. And it's a general culture, certainly in this country, of constantly talking about referees. And So Powell isn't the sole problem.
No, we're
here,
obsessed.
At the moment, he's coming to the firing line at the minute. As you say, it's that culture.
Oh, but you know, with Cass, I just felt there's a lot of players coming to the end of their careers, and they brought in some players like Richardson, like Tyler Heppe, who have really not a lot of Super League experience that we're going to benefit from this year. You're throwing your likes of Jax O'Neill, who I'm a massive fan of. I think he's great, but again, not a lot of experience. I feel like this was always going to be a year, a bit of transition, really, for Cass. And I think what's fair to say is they're not a million miles off, are they? They're not a million miles away, but at the same time, they're not good enough to compete for the four at the minute.
You mentioned earlier, I think it was you, Alex, who said, you know, criticising referees, it's a bit of a, you know, it's what rugby league fans do and that kind of thing. But there's another hobby horse of rugby league fans, and that's the Toronto Wolfpack. And we'll segue ourselves there right now to discuss the latest goings on with regards to Canada. Matthew, I'll come to you. I mean, they've had a reprieve, got another 4 weeks or so to get back to Super League with some proposals. Robert Elston's insisted he's given Toronto every opportunity. But it does feel like we're at a bit of a crossroads now as a sport.
The whole thing surprises me for many reasons. I'll start with Toronto side of things. And I'm staggered that at Lavolse's admission that he didn't put enough due care into the bid. I'm thinking, come on, you knew that you weren't popular in the first place, not necessarily him, but the club itself. So then to put in a bid that, by their own admitters, wasn't up to standard, you just think, well, come on, you've got to be better than that. You've got to be better than that. And I think, in truth, they can consider themselves lucky that they've got this extra 4 weeks as a result of that. Now, at the same time, I think, as a result, the Super League clubs have now shown their hand. I really do. Because all this talk and bravado that they wanted them out, they wanted them gone, they weren't in favour. Well, if this bid wasn't good enough, as Toronto are admitting themselves, and they've given them another 4 weeks, that suggests to me that really, they don't mean that they don't want them in. Now, whether it's that they don't want them in, or, and it could well be this, they're scared to pull the trigger and boot them out. Could be a bit of that they don't want to make such a call. But I genuinely think Super League have shown their hand now, because if they really wanted them out, they could have got them out and they could have justified it. So for me...
Well, as we understand it, three clubs voted against them last Friday, which were the three Yorkshire clubs, Castleford, Huddersfield and Wakefield. Yeah. And Robert Elston also voted against them. But I think, from what I understand, I think the person who probably rescued the situation for Toronto was the RFL chairman, Simon Johnson, who I think opened the debate and spoke very supportively, although not uncritically, about Toronto. You know, I think, Matthew, you're absolutely right that the Toronto submission had certain weaknesses. Although it was an 84-page submission, so it was a fairly lengthy one. Touching upon many areas, but where it was weak was in some of its financial projections, and you know, they seem to misunderstand the amount of central funding that's available.
The point is, Martin, that shouldn't happen.
Well, it shouldn't have happened, ideally. No, it shouldn't, but it did. But you know, hopefully, by the time they amend their submission, they'll amend it on a much more realistic basis. What we have to sort of bear in mind is that if Carlo Lavolse is going to be the new owner of the Wolfpack, and I personally hope he is, then he's got to recognise that, you know, that will come at a cost. He's going to have to use some of his own personal assets to support the club, at least in the short to medium term. Hopefully in the longer term, the club will grow to the point at which it can be self-sustaining. But that, you know, that obviously won't be immediately, although they do, you know, they do start off, if they do come back next year, they do begin with a great deal of support from within the city of Toronto, it seems, you know, with a lot of people in that city keen to see them succeed, not least the mayor of the city himself, you know, which is a massive plus in their favour. But the question that the Super League was asking, and Robert Elston in particular, was whether, you know, strategically it makes sense for Super League to be in North America in the first place.
Can I jump in on Elston? I really struggle to understand the man. Just some of the things he said. So the first thing is, we know, and Super League can try and deny it, he's against Toronto coming back. It's not a secret.
Well, just to say, Matthew, to be fair to Robert, he has, you know, Aaron's article this week. He does say he's giving them every opportunity. So he might be.
Is it him or is it because the clubs? Come on. He was against, on the evidence that he saw, he said he was against them coming back. I think you will find that the clubs were the ones who pushed through this extra time slot. So he talks about finding out if there's value in having Super League in North America and in Canada. Right, well, question A, what are you going to do to figure that out in 4 weeks? Doesn't seem like a project you take on and find the answers and detailed analysis in 4 weeks. B, who's doing it? Because if he's doing it and he's the man who we all know is against them coming back, then surely that's not right. So what what is he wanting to find out? What does he want to achieve from it? What does he want to know? Because he says that getting a few tweets off other teams isn't enough, which I don't disagree with, by the way. But what does he want to know? The other thing that I just thought was shocking was what he said about, ultimately, it's whether Toronto can make money, can make sure that there's more money in the pockets of the other clubs. Now, hang on, let's just slow down there for 1 minute. So what he's effectively saying is, can Toronto make sure that they can sort everyone else out financially? Right, well, hang on, let's look at the accounts of Super League from the last year, his first full year in charge. The amount of commercial revenue that came in went down. This is despite the fact that Elston and his team were brought in to increase commercial revenue. So why isn't that being scrutinised? Why isn't he looking at himself and seeing why he isn't bringing in the money? Not only is he not bringing in any more money, it's gone down. Second of all, over the last 10 years, over a 10-year period, of the 11 clubs currently in Super League, only two have seen an increase in attendances over a 10-year period. One of them's Catalans, by the way, for the whole expansion. That's a different conversation. The other's Cass. And Casses have gone up marginally as a result of when they had that excellent 2017 season and the crowds went up. So why aren't we looking at why the clubs are all seeing a decrease in attendances and therefore bringing in less money themselves because the ticket revenue is down? Why aren't we looking at the commercial deals that are being done across the clubs and why they aren't increasing their own commercial revenue interests? Why aren't we talk about scrutinising Toronto and what they're doing for the player pool? And there are some clubs that do a very good job of bringing their own through. But does every Super League club do it? Not as far as I'm aware. We talk about clubs being sustainable, yet they're happy to spend up salary cap. They don't have to. So why is it that all we're looking at is Toronto this, Toronto that? Are they doing this? Are they doing that? So on and so forth. Can they make us money? How about we look at what Super League as a governing body, as an executive body, and how about we look at each individual club and see what they are doing to build their own brand, to build their own price profile, to build their own revenue streams, to build their own commercial interest, rather than say, can Toronto do it for us? Why Toronto are suddenly now expected, from what Elston's saying, to be the saviour of the sport? Why?
And for a counter argument now, we hand over just across the office to Alex Davis. Off you go, Alex.
Well, from my part, I've listened to these guys, Robert. On it's my turn. From my point of view, I think Toronto, as Matt has said, are being held to a different account to the rest of the clubs, and I don't think that's particularly fair. Matt said it as well. What can Toronto do for us? It's a very selfish, in my opinion, a very selfish point of view for Super League Europe to have. Really, I think they want Toronto to make them money. And that's all they're good for, in their opinion. But in reality, Toronto can offer so much more. They can offer expansion of the game in all sorts of different kind of ways. We saw what they did with Sonny Bill Williams and what the NRL have done with Sonny Bill Williams. They have made that transfer lucrative because they've marketed it properly, and that's what Toronto can offer. Something that they were able to get Sonny Bill Williams into Super League, and that is what they can offer. And I think all this is kind of giving them a bit of an excuse, perhaps, to quit on them. Really, isn't it?
But the other thing, right? When Toronto were brought in, why did we try North American expansion of the sport? We tried it because we wanted to increase the player pool and we wanted to make more money. So of course we should be looking at how Toronto can make money for the sport. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But my argument is, you've got, how can they make more money for us? They don't take a penny from Super League at the minute. They don't take a penny. They pay for the flights and the accommodation, everything like that. Yet you've got clubs that are taking, is it 1.6 million a year at Super League level out of the game? Yet we don't ask what
1.8, I think.
It's something in that region. But they all take that out every year. A lot of those clubs have been in there for a long, long time taking this money. But why aren't we looking at what they do? Because they haven't, clearly by them being in all this time, the game hasn't grown. We haven't got bigger. The crowds haven't gone up. So why aren't we looking at what they're doing, and why haven't we been doing it for a long time? Why is it just Toronto?
The fact is that there are no defined standards, by which Super League clubs have to be held to account, are there? At one time, we used to have something called Framing the Future, going back 25 years or so, but that seems to have gone by the wayside. And as far as I'm aware, there are no minimum standards now for Super League clubs at all, either in terms of stadiums, in terms of financial strength, in terms of, you know, junior club strength and so on in their districts. So, you know, perhaps what Super League ought to do is to create some standards that they can then use to measure the progress of the clubs that are members.
Basically, what I'm saying is all these decisions and all these things have happened where standards have been so low. Yet then when it comes to Toronto, we want them to effectively fund the rest of the clubs for theirs and Super League shortcomings. That's how it comes across, and that's how it's interpreted to me. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that Toronto should just be allowed to walk back in. I think they should be sanctioned. I think me and Martin disagree with that. I think they should be sanctioned. However, this idea that they have to be squeaky clean.
Could I just cover that bit? Because should they be sanctioned? I mean, there's the element of not paying the players' wages,
which is disgraceful, exactly. By the way.
It is, but the trouble is, if you've run out of money, you can't pay people. I mean, you have to recognise that this year, the COVID situation, completely unprecedented. Carlo Lavolsi has said that he will, if they're accepted back into Super League, he will pay all the backdated salaries to all the players who haven't yet been paid. He doesn't own the club, doesn't own it yet, as far as I'm aware. He will only own it if and when they're admitted back into Super League. So until that point, he has no liabilities.
All this started because of COVID. I look at non-league football, and especially the tier that I cover, and, you know, Merthyr Town, it's like you can't play games, so you could sit the competition out this year. Same with Guernsey, same with the Isle of Man in the North West Counties League. We've not really done that, have we? We've not really been that understanding to clubs like Toronto. Even Catalans were making noises in the early stages of all this.
Well, I think the thing with Toronto was the timing of it all. We were all set to start again, weren't we, with 12 teams, and then a week or so before the restart, Toronto pulled out for the reasons that we all know. And I think Catalan have really pulled the finger out to make the game happen. We've seen it in the NRL with New Zealand Warriors. They've sacrificed a huge amount to keep this competition going. Bernard Gouache is dipping his hand into his pocket every time to fly the players back and forth to England on their own private chartered jet. And even last week when it all went wrong, they still managed to get here and they still managed to create a great game for us all. So in that respect, we do have to pay tribute to those people that are still keeping it going. But the reason why we perhaps are quite hard on Toronto was that timing, I think.
That was always predictable, though. I mean, as soon as we had the shutdown at the end of March, I would have thought that Super League would have been on to Toronto to say, look, you know, the whole of sport in North America has shut down, which it did. whatever code of sport you're talking about, baseball, NBA, Major League Soccer, whatever, they all shut down completely. So was it ever realistic to think that one club in North America could keep going when all the others had closed, and it was a club that was having to, you know, come backwards and forwards?
Well, you're absolutely right, Martin, but the point is that the RFL didn't see it coming, did they? Or Super didn't see it coming.
And Toronto, until that very day, had said all the way through, we're playing. You know, you can't blame Super League for that. If Toronto had given them,
I think you've got to say, look, I mean, they obviously wanted to carry on playing as anybody would do, but it became unrealistic because of COVID and because of deteriorating financial situation. So, you know, that should have been a warning sign, you know, at the end of March, really, or at least during April, that the thing was just not going to be viable. And it would have been better if the announcement had come from Super League or the RFL to say, you know, we're going to give Toronto a sort of a furlough for the rest of this year to come back next year.
If they are saying we are playing, you can't blame Super League for then thinking, oh, they're going to play.
Well, we'll wait and see what happens next. But to find out what happens next, TotalRL.com and, of course, League Express out every Monday across the world on the online platforms.
Absolutely.
And in paper shops across the world as well, wherever you can order your paper. But just before we move on, because we're going to close the show off talking about the NRL, Alex, so we'll get you started in a second.
To recover from that headache after all that. Give me a few minutes.
It was like reading in forums and social media, wasn't it? But in audio form. But lively chatter, that's good. Challenge Cup semi-finals this weekend. Just a quick chat about that. Salford taking on Warrington. They've already played this week. Salford got a victory on Tuesday against Warrington. Alex, can Salford get to Wembley? Can I book my tickets now, even though I won't be allowed in?
You might as well book your tickets right now. I think they've definitely got a chance. They've proved it. They can beat anybody. This Super League season, as we've seen, all the teams towards the bottom of the table have either competed or been able to beat those teams at the top. Salford looked, they had a poor start against Catalan, but they did totally deserve to win that game. And they've earned their place in the semi-finals, and they 100% have a chance of winning that game.
What, anyone for Warrington?
That was my fault.
That was my Chris Wallace impression. I wasn't moderating properly. Matthew, Warrington.
Look, I think I'm with Alex. I think Salford have a chance. They are capable of winning the game. I know how much emphasis Salford are putting on the Challenge Cup and how desperate they are. I think they'll give them a mighty fight, but Warrington are just playing well.
It might worry them a little bit, Salford, that they weren't able to beat Warrington comfortably this week with a lot of Warrington youngsters in the side. I think that might worry them.
They had a fair few out themselves, though.
They did.
And I would have
still expected Salford to have won that game by more. No disrespect to any of the Warrington players, because they played excellently to come that close.
Don't forget that a lot of those Warrington players, while not played first grade together, have been playing reserve grade and academy level together for a long, long time.
Yes, but they haven't been playing for 9 months.
Whereas Salford had Ollie Asholbot and Tom Gilmore come into the side in key positions, and they had one training session together. So I think that's a fair contributing factor to why that game went as it did. Nevertheless, I still think that Warrington, the way they are playing at the minute, they've actually impressed me the most since lockdown of Warrington. So I think...
Well, that was the first game they'd lost, wasn't it?
Yeah. Just really impressed watching them live. They're just really vocal, and the most vocal team in the comp for me from being there and having the privilege of that quirk of no crowds.
Martin, just a mention as well for the other semi-final, which kicks off before. Both games on TV, we should say, on Saturday afternoon, which is great stuff. Leeds against Wigan. What do you think for that one?
Well, I find it hard to call, if I'm really honest about it. I think Wigan, I'm marginally in favour of Wigan. I think they've just got probably more star quality players like Bevan French and, you know, Hardacre and Jackson Hastings and so on. I tell you, the ideal game at Wembley, in a way, would be Wigan versus Salford, with Jackson Hastings playing against Salford on that big stage, you know, and it, I think that'd be fascinating to see. But so I'm just backing Wigan, but, you know, Leeds, I think, have got every chance, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if Leeds did win, provided they've got out a reasonably full strength side on Saturday.
And obviously, like we said, those matches live on Saturday on the BBC. 2:30 kickoff for Leeds v Wigan, and Salford v Warrington is a 5 o'clock kickoff. Both matches take place at the Totally Wicked Stadium in St Helens. Just before we move to the Southern Hemisphere, we normally talk about Championship and League One. Obviously, Championship and League One hasn't happened this year. But Matthew, there's a little glimmer of light which have picked up from association football, and that's the government basically saying to the National League this past week, kick off the FA Cup, kick off your seasons, you won't be allowed crowds, but we'll cover you. Is there a bit of hope there for Championship and League One, regardless of where we're heading with COVID, if it is behind closed doors? There's a chance there now, isn't there, hopefully?
Yeah, there is a chance. I know that they've spoke about testing as well, and not having to be as rigorous, like the EFL. No, the EFL aren't doing regular testing. So I don't think the testing is necessarily a problem. It is the crowds. I still think, I did a piece this week saying that there's potential for a March start. I'd like to think it would be earlier than that, but it will all be dependent on crowds being allowed back in grounds. Some of the latest news will probably give them hope. The problem is at Championship level, you do have some clubs that get big crowds. So it might be difficult.
I kind of disagree with testing. While obviously it'd be great if you could test each week, I realise that cost-wise, that probably isn't possible for Championship League One clubs. But rugby is very different to football. And if you're going to be training, you're going to have contact sessions. You probably won't have that in football. They probably won't do that. In rugby, you will have to do that if you're going to play games.
No.
And that is when your transmission is going to happen, and that's when your coronavirus cases are going to go up. So I think testing as much as possible is key for the Championship of League One clubs. Otherwise, it just runs straight through the squads.
Well, let's go to the Southern Hemisphere, where the crowds are slightly bigger. The NRL finals are underway. Penrith have got a week off now, which is nice. But a tense final.
They've earned it, haven't they?
Yeah, a tense final minute.
16 wins in a row.
Yeah, a tense final minute, though, against the Roosters.
Yeah, it was. It was. Kept the match ceiling field goal with 2 minutes to go, but still managed to concede to make it interesting, didn't they? But in the end, a fairly comfy little last minute there. The Panthers, all their squad are basically heading into their first finals competition, and they're against the Roosters, who all of them have been there, bought the T-shirt and got the grand final ring to prove it, haven't they? But they passed that test, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have to pass that test again, perhaps in the grand final against the Roosters.
There we go. Martin, I was just going to say, though, I mean, it's nice to have, apart from Sunday's match, which isn't going to be on telly, we had that glimpse, didn't we, of every single NRL game on television. And I know because of broadcast restrictions, we're only allowed three. We're pretty much seeing most of these games in these closing weeks now, which is great because the competition's been superb, I feel.
Oh, it has. I didn't realise that Sunday's game wasn't on TV. You're telling me something there I didn't know about.
I'm going off your paper here at the bottom. It says no TV.
There's a technical thing with that. When we put together the fixtures, it was impossible to see whether that game was on Sky or not because the Sky Sports TV guy goes up to Saturday.
do we know?
Ah, right. So it probably is on.
It possibly is on, yes. But at the time when we printed, we couldn't see whether that game was on TV or not. That is a technical issue.
But again, you know, just talking about the NRL, I would love to see Penrith win the grand final because, frankly, they've been the best team this year. And, you know, they've not won it since, I think, 2003, if I remember rightly. And, you know, the Roosters have won it for the last couple of years. So I think I'm probably like most NRL fans who are not Roosters fans. They probably would like to see somebody else winning it this time. And yet on the other hand, most NRL fans are not that keen on Melbourne Storm. They do like Parramatta, but I can't quite see Parramatta having what it takes to beat Penrith at the moment, although they may play each other in the major semi-final in a couple of weeks' time. And then there's Canberra, of course, with all the English guys, and they play Cronulla tomorrow, I think it is, Alex, isn't it? So, yeah, you know, there's a lot to play for, and it's an absolutely great competition, I think.
Just to confirm the matches for this weekend then, Saturday, both games on telly, as we understand, Canberra and Cronulla, Melbourne and Parramatta, and then on Sunday, South Sydney against Newcastle. So we're into the closing stretch now for the NRL, and we're approaching the closing stretch of Super League 2 and the Challenge Cup. So plenty of stuff to talk about on Total RL, on the forum, and on the website itself. And also to say, League Express out on Monday, Martin.
It is, and full of everything, full of the Challenge Cup, full of Super League, full of the NRL playoffs, and we have a new leader in the Albert Goldthorpe medal table. So people will be able to see who that is on Monday morning, plus all the news that you want to know about rugby league.
Brilliant stuff. A big thank you to Martin Sadler for joining us on this edition of the Total Rugby League Show. Big thank you as well to Matthew Shaw, as well as Alex Davis, of course. And you make sure that you all stay safe, and you'll be hearing from us again very soon. Bye-bye.